This is Audible.
Candlewick on Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of The Knife of Never Letting Go by Patrick Ness, performed by Nick Podell. For Michelle Cass. If we had a keen vision and feeling of all ordinary human life, it would be like hearing the grass grow and the squirrel's heart beat, and we should die of that roar which lies on the other side of silence. George Eliot, Middlemarch. Part 1. 1. The hole in the noise. The first thing you find out when your dog learns to talk is that dogs don't got nothing much to say about anything.
Need a poo, Todd?
Shut up, Manchy.
Pooh! Pooh, Todd!
I said shut it! We're walking across the wild fields southeast of town, those ones that slope down to the river and head on toward the swamp. Ben sent me to pick him some swamp apples, and he's made me take Manchy with me, even though we all know Killian only bought him to stay on Mayor Prentice's good side, and so suddenly here's this brand new dog as a present for my birthday last year, when I never said I wanted any dog. That what I said I wanted was for Killian to finally fix the fission bike so I wouldn't have to walk every forsaken place in this stupid town. But oh no. Happy birthday, Todd. Here's a brand new puppy, Todd. And even though you don't want him, even though you never asked for him, guess who has to feed him and train him and wash him and take him for walks and listen to him jabber now he's got old enough for the talking germ to set his mouth moving? Guess who?
Pooh.
Manchy barks quietly to himself.
Pooh, pooh, pooh.
Just have your stupid poo and quit yapping about it. I take a switch of grass from beside the trail, and I swat after him with it. I don't reach him. I don't mean to reach him. But he just laughs his little barking laugh and carries on down the trail. I follow after him, switching the switch against the grass on either side, squinting from the sun, trying not to think about nothing at all. We don't need apples from the swamp, truth be told. Ben can buy them at Mr. Phelps' store if he really wants them. Also true, going to the swamp to pick a few apples is not a job for a man, 'cause men are never allowed to be so idle. Now, I won't officially become a man for 30 more days. I've lived 12 years of 13 long months each, and another 12 months besides, all of which living means I'm still 1 month away from the big birthday. The plans are being planned, the preparations prepared. It will be a party, I guess, though I'm starting to get some strange pictures about it. All dark and too bright at the same time. But nevertheless, I will become a man, and picking apples in the swamp is not a job for a man, or even an almost man. But Ben knows he can ask me to go, and he knows I'll say yes to going, because the swamp is the only place anywhere near Prentistown where you can have half a break from all the noise that men spill out of themselves, all their clamor and clatter that never lets up, even when they sleep. Men and the thoughts they don't know they think, even when everyone can hear. Men and their noise. I don't know how they do it, how they stand each other. Men are noisy creatures.
Squirrel!
Manchy shouts, and off he goes, jumping off the trail, no matter how loud I yell after him. And off I have to go, too, across the... I look around to make sure I'm alone. Goddamn fields, 'cause Killian will have a fit if Manchy falls down some goddamn snake hole. And of course it'll be my own goddamn fault, even though I never wanted the goddamn dog in the goddamn first place. Manchy! Get back here!
Squirrel!
I have to kick my way through the grass, getting grublets stuck to my shoes. One smashes as I kick it off, leaving a green smear across my sneakers, which I know from experience ain't coming out.
Manchy!
I rage.
Squirrel! Squirrel! Squirrel!
He's barking round the tree, and the squirrel's skittering back and forth on the tree trunk, taunting him.
Come on, whirler dog, says its noise. Come on, come get! Come on, come get! Whirler, whirler, whirler!
Squirrel, Todd! Squirrel!
Goddamn animals are stupid. I grab Manchy by the collar and hit him hard across his back leg.
Ow, Todd! Ow!
I hit him again. And again,
ow, Todd!
Come on, I say, my own noise raging so loud I can barely hear myself think, which is something I'm about to regret. You watch.
Whirler boy. Whirler boy, thinks the squirrel at me. Come get, Whirler boy.
You can F off too, I say, except I don't say F. I say what F stands for. And I really, really should have looked around again. 'Cause here's Aaron, right here, rising out of the grass from nowhere, rising up and smacking me across the face, scratching my lip with his big ring, then bringing his hand back the other way, closed as a fist, catching my cheekbone, but at least missing my nose because I'm falling into the grass, trying to fall away from his punch. And I let go of Manchi's collar, and off he runs back to the squirrel, barking his head off, the traitor. And I hit the grass with my knees and my hands, getting grublet stains all over everything. And I stay there, on the ground, breathing. Aaron stands over me, his noise coming at me in fragments of scripture and of his next sermon, and, "Language, young Todd," and, "The finding of a sacrifice," and, "The saint chooses his path," and, "God hears," and the wash of pictures that's in everyone's noise, of things familiar, and glancing flashes of, "What? What the forsaken?" But up flies a loud bit of his sermon to block it out, and I look up into his eyes and suddenly I don't want to know. I can already taste the blood where his ring cut my lip, and I don't want to know. He never comes out here. Men never do. They have their reasons, men do, and it's just me and my dog only ever, but here he is, and I don't want to know. He smiles down at me, through that beard of his, smiles down at me in the grass, a smiling fist. "Language, young Todd," he says, "binds us like prisoners on a chain. Haven't you learned anything from your church, boy?" And then he says his most familiar preaching. "If one of us falls, we all fall." "Yes, Aaron," I think. "With your mouth, Todd." "Yes, Aaron," I say. "And the F's," he says, "and the GD's, because don't think I didn't hear them as well. Your noise reveals you, reveals us all." "Not all," I think, but at the same time I say, "Sorry, Aaron." He leans down to me, his lips close to my face, and I can smell the breath that comes out of his mouth, smell the weight of it, like fingers grabbing for me. "God hears," he whispers. "God hears." He raises a hand again and I flinch, and he laughs, and then he's gone like that, heading back toward the town, taking his noise with him. I'm shaking from the charge to my blood at being hit, shaking from being so fired up and so surprised and so angry and so much hating this town and the men in it that it takes me a while till I can get up and go get my dog again. What was he effing doing out here anyway, I think, and I'm so hacked off, still so raging with anger and hate and fear, yes, fear, shut up, that I don't even look around to see if Aaron heard my noise. I don't look round. I don't look round. And then I do look round, and I go and get my dog.
"Aaron, Todd? Aaron?"
"Don't say that name again, Manchi."
"Bleeding, Todd. Todd? 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 Bleeding."
"I know. Shut up."
"Whirler,"
he says, as if it don't mean nothing. His head as empty as the sky. I smack his rump. "Don't say that neither.
Ow! Todd?"
We keep on walking, staying clear of the river on our left. It runs down through a series of gulches at the east of town, starting way up to the north past our farm and coming down the side of the town till it flattens out into a marshy part that eventually becomes the swamp. You have to avoid the river, and especially that marshy part before the swamp trees start, 'cause that's where the crocs live, easily big enough to kill an almost man and his dog. The fins on their backs look just like a row of rushes, and if you get too close, whoom! Out of the water they come, flying at you with their claws grasping and their mouths snapping, and you pretty much ain't got no chance at all then. We get ourselves down past the marshy part, and I try to take in the swamp quiet as it approaches. There's nothing to see down here no more, really, which is why men don't come. And the smell, too. I don't pretend it don't smell, but it don't smell nearly so bad as men make out. They're smelling their memories, they are. They're not smelling what's really here. They're smelling it like it was then. All the dead things. Spacks and men had different ideas for burial. Spacks just used the swamp. Threw their dead right into the water. Let them sink. Which was fine, cause they were suited for swamp burial, I guess. That's what Ben says. Water and muck and spackle skin worked fine together. Didn't poison nothing, just made the swamp richer, like men do to soil. Then suddenly, of course, there were a whole lot more spacks to bury than normal. Too many for even a swamp this big to swallow. And it's a ruddy big swamp, too. And then, there were no live spacks at all, were there? Just spack bodies in heaps, piling up in the swamp and rotting and stinking, and it took a long time for the swamp to become swamp again, and not just a mess of flies and smells and who knows what extra germs they'd kept saved up for us. I was born into all that mess. The overcrowded swamp and the overcrowded cemetery and the not crowded enough town, so I don't remember nothing, don't remember a world without noise. My pa died of sickness before I was born, and then my ma died, of course. No surprises there. Ben and Killian took me in, raised me. Ben says my ma was the last of the women, but everyone says that about everyone's ma. Ben may not be lying. He believes it's true, but who knows? I am the youngest of the whole town, though. I used to come out and throw rocks at field crows with Reg Oliver, 7 months and 8 days older, and Liam Smith, 4 months and 29 days older, and Seb Mundy, who was the next youngest to me, 3 months and a day older. But even he don't talk to me no more now that he's a man. No boys do once they turn 13, which is how it goes in Prentice Town. Boys become men, and they go to their men-only meetings to talk about who knows what, and boys most definitely ain't allowed. And if you're the last boy in town, you just have to wait, all by yourself. Well, you and a dog you don't want. But never mind. Here's the swamp, and in we go, sticking to the paths that take us round and over the worst of the water, weaving our way round the big, bulby trees that grow up and out of the bog to the needly roof, yards and yards up. The air's thick, and it's dark, and it's heavy. But it's not a frightening kind of thick and dark and heavy. There's lots of life here. Tons of it. Just ignoring the town as you please. Birds and green snakes and frogs and civets and both kinds of squirrel, and I promise you, a casser or two. And sure, there's red snakes to watch out for, but even though it's dark, there's slashes of light that comes down from holes in the roof. And if you ask me, which, granted, you may not be, to me, the swamp's like one big, comfy, not very noisy room. Dark, but living. Living, but friendly. Friendly, but not grasping. Manchie lifts his leg on practically everything till he must be running out of pee, and then he heads off under a bush, burbling to himself, finding a place to do his other business, I guess. But the swamp don't mind. How could it? It's all just life, going over itself, returning and cycling and eating itself to grow. I mean, it's not that it's not noisy here. Sure it is. There's no escaping noise, not nowhere at all, but it's quieter than the town. The loud is a different kind of loud, because swamp loud is just curiosity, creatures figuring out who you are and if you're a threat, whereas the town knows all about you already and wants to know more and wants to beat you with what it knows till how can you have any of yourself left at all? Swamp noise, though, swamp noise is just the birds all thinking their worrisome little birdie thoughts. Where's food? Where's home? Where's my safety? And the waxy squirrels, who are all little punks, teasing you if they see you, teasing themselves if they don't. And the rusty squirrels, who are like dumb little kids, and sometimes they're swamp foxes out in the leaves who you can hear faking their noise to sound like the squirrels they eat. And even less often, there are mavens singing their weird maven songs. And once, I swear, I saw a casser running away on two long legs. But Ben says I didn't. Says the cassers are long gone from the swamp. I don't know. I believe me. Manchie comes out of the bushes and sits down next to me, because I've stopped right there in the middle of a trail. He looks around to see what I might be seeing, and then he says, "Good poo, Todd." I'm sure it was, Manchy. I'd better not get another ruddy dog when my birthday comes. What I want this year is a hunting knife like the one Ben carries on the back of his belt. Now that's a present for a man.
Pooh,
Manchy says quietly. On we walk. The main bunch of apple trees is a little ways into the swamp, down a few paths and over a fallen log that Manchy always needs help over. When we get there, I pick him up around his stomach and lift him to the top. Even though he knows what I'm doing, he still kicks his legs all over the place like a falling spider, making a fuss for no reason at all.
Hold still, you gonk!
Down, down, down!
He yelps, scrabbling away at the air. Idiot dog! I plop him on the top of the log and climb up myself. We both jump down to the other side, Manchy barking,
jump!
As he lands, and keeping on barking,
jump!
As he runs off. The leap over the log is where the dark of the swamp really starts, and the first thing you see are the old spackle buildings, leaning out toward you from shadow, looking like melting blobs of tan-colored ice cream, except hut-sized. No one knows or can remember what they were ever supposed to be, but best guess by Ben, who's a best guess kind of guy, is that they had something to do with burying their dead. Maybe even some kind of church. Even though the Spacks don't have no kind of religion anyone from Prentistown could recognize. I keep a wide distance from them and go into the little grove of wild apple trees. The apples are ripe, nearly black, almost edible, as Killian would say. I pick one off the trunk and take a bite, the juice dribbling down my chin.
Todd!
What, Manchy? I take the plastic bag I've got folded in my back pocket and start filling it with apples.
Todd!
He barks again, and this time I notice how he's barking it, and I turn and he's pointed at the spackle buildings, and his fur's all ridged up on his back, and his ears are flicking all over the place. I stand up straight. What is it, boy? He's growling now. His lips pulled back over his teeth. I feel the charge in my blood again. Is it a croc? I say.
Quiet, Todd.
Manchy growls. But what is it?
Is quiet, Todd.
He lets out a little bark, and it's a real bark. A real dog bark that means nothing but bark. And my body electricity goes up a bit, like charges are gonna start leaping out of my skin.
Listen,
he growls. And so I listen. And I listen. And I turn my head a little, and I listen some more. There's a hole in the noise. Which can't be. It's weird, it is. Out there. Hiding somewhere in the trees or somewhere out of sight. A spot where your ears and your mind are telling you there's no noise. It's like a shape you can't see except by how everything else around it is touching it. Like water in the shape of a cup, but with no cup. It's a hole, and everything that falls into it stops being noise. Stops being anything. Just stops altogether. It's not like the quiet of the swamp, which is never quiet, obviously, just less noisy. But this is a shape. A shape of nothing. A hole where all noise stops. Which is impossible. There ain't nothing but noise in this world. Nothing but the constant thoughts of men and things coming at you, and at you, and at you. Ever since the Spacks released the noise germ during the war. The germ that killed half the men and every single woman, my ma not excepted. The germ that drove the rest of the men mad. The germ that spelled the end for all spackle once men's madness picked up a gun.
Todd?
Manchy spooked. I can hear it.
What, Todd? What's it, Todd?
Can you smell anything?
Just smell quiet, Todd,
he barks. Then he starts barking louder.
Quiet! Quiet!
And then, somewhere around the Spack buildings, the quiet moves. My blood charge leaps so hard it about knocks me over. Manchy yelps in a circle around me, barking and barking, making me double spooked, and so I smack him on the rump again.
Oh, Todd!
To make myself calm down. There's no such thing as holes, I say. No such thing as nothing. So it's gotta be a something, don't it?
Something, Todd!
Manchy barks. Can you hear where it went?
It's quiet, Todd.
You know what I mean. Manchi sniffs the air and takes one step, two, then more toward the spackle buildings. I guess we're looking for it, then. I start walking all slow-like up to the biggest of the melty ice cream scoops. I stay out of the way of anything that might be looking out the little bendy triangle doorway. Manchi's sniffing at the doorframe, but he's not growling, so I take a deep breath, and I look inside. It's totally empty. The ceiling rises up to a point about another length of me above my head. Floor's dirt, swamp plants growing in it now, vines and such like, but nothing else. Which is to say, no real nothing. No hole and no telling what might have been here before. It's stupid, but I gotta say it. I'm wondering if the spackle are back. But that's impossible. But a hole in the noise is impossible. So something impossible has to be true. I can hear Manchi snuffling around again outside, so I creep out and I go to the second scoop. There's writing on the outside of this one. The only written words anyone's ever seen in the Spack language. The only words they ever saw fit to write down, I guess. The letters are Spack letters, but Ben says they make the sound Espakili or such like. Espakili. The spackle. Spacks, if you want to spit it. Which, since what happened happened, is what everyone does, means the people. There's nothing in the second scoop, neither. I step back out into the swamp, and I listen again. I put my head down, and I listen, and I reach with the hearing parts of my brain, and I listen there, too. And I listen. And listen. I listen.
Quiet, quiet!
Manchi barks twice, real fast, and peels off running again toward the last scoop. I take off after him, running myself, my blood charging, 'cause that's where it is. That's where the hole in the noise is. I can hear it. Well, I can't hear it. That's the whole point. But when I run toward it, the emptiness of it is touching my chest, and the stillness of it pulls at me, and there's so much quiet in it. No, not quiet. Silence. So much unbelievable silence that I start to feel really torn up. Like I'm about to lose the most valuable thing ever. Like, there it is, a death. And I'm running, and my eyes are watering, and my chest is just crushing, and there's no one to see, but I still mind, and my eyes start crying. They start crying. They start effing crying. And I stop for a minute, and I bend over, and Jesus H. damn it, you can just shut up right now. But I waste a whole stupid minute. Just a whole stinking stupid minute bent over there, by which time, of course, the hole is moving away. It's moved away. It's gone. Manchi's torn twixt racing after it and coming back to me, but he finally comes back to me.
Crying, Todd? Shut up,
I say, and aim a kick at him. It misses on purpose. 2. Prentice Town. We get ourselves out of the swamp and head back toward town, and the world feels all black and gray no matter what the sun is saying. Even Manchi barely says nothing as we make our way back up through the fields. My noise churns and bubbles like a stew on the boil, till finally I have to stop for a minute to calm myself down a little. There's just no such thing as silence. Not here. Not nowhere. Not when you're asleep. Not when you're by yourself. Never. I am Todd Hewitt, I think to myself with my eyes closed. I am 12 years and 12 months old. I live in Prentice Town, a new world. I will be a man in 1 month's time exactly. It's a trick Ben taught me to help settle my noise. You close your eyes and as clearly and calmly as you can, you tell yourself who you are, because that's what gets lost in all that noise. I am Todd Hewitt.
Todd Hewitt,
Manchi murmurs to himself beside me. I take a deep breath and open my eyes. That's who I am. I'm Todd Hewitt. We walk on up away from the swamp and the river, up the slope of the wild fields to the small ridge at the south of town where the school used to be for the brief and useless time it existed. Before I was born, boys were taught by their ma at home, and then, when there were only boys and men left, we just got sat down in front of vids and learning modules till Mayor Prentice outlawed such things as detrimental to the discipline of our minds. Mayor Prentice, see, has a point of view. And so for almost half a stupid year, all the boys were gathered up by sad-faced Mr. Royal and plonked out here in an outbuilding away from the main noise of the town. Not that it helped. It's nearly impossible to teach anything in a classroom full of boys' noise, and completely impossible to give out any sort of test. You cheat even if you don't mean to, and everybody means to. And then one day, Mayor Prentice decided to burn all the books. Every single one of them. Even the ones in men's homes, 'cause apparently, books were detrimental as well, and Mr. Royal, a soft man who made himself a hard man by drinking whiskey in the classroom, gave up and took a gun and put an end to himself. And that was it for my classroom teaching. Ben taught me the rest at home. Mechanics and food prep and clothes repair and farming basics and things like that. Also, a lot of survival stuff like hunting and which fruits you can eat and how to follow the moons for directions and how to use a knife and a gun and snake bite remedies and how to calm your noise as best you can. He tried to teach me reading and writing, too, but Mayor Prentice caught wind of it in my noise one morning and locked Ben up for a week, and that was the end of my book learning, and what with all that other stuff to learn, and all the working on the farm that still has to be done every day, and all the just plain surviving, I never ended up reading too good. Don't matter. Ain't nobody in Prenticetown ever gonna write a book. Manchi and me get past the school building, and up on the little ridge, and look north. And there it is, the town itself. Not that there's all that much left of it no more. One shop, used to be two. One bar, used to be two. One clinic, one jail, one non-working gas station, one big house for the mayor, one police station, the church. One short bit of road running through the center, paved back in the day, never upkept since, goes to gravel real quick. All the houses and such are out and about, outskirts-like, farms, meant to be farms. Some still are, some stand empty, some stand worse than empty. And that's all there is of Prenticetown. Population 147 and falling, falling, falling. 146 men and one almost man. Ben says there used to be other settlements scattered around New World, that all the ships landed about the same time, 10 years or so before I was born. But that when the war started with the SPACs, when the SPACs released the germs and all the other settlements were wiped out, that Prenticetown was nearly wiped out too, that it only survived because of Mayor Prentice's army skills, and that even though Mayor Prentice is a nightmare coming and going, we at least owe him that. That 'cause of him, we survive alone on a whole big, empty, womanless world that ain't got nothing good to say for itself, in a town of 146 men that dies a little more with every day that passes. 'Cause some men can't take it, can they? They off themselves like Mr. Royal, or some of them just plain disappear, like Mr. Galt, our old neighbor who used to run the other sheep farm, or Mr. Michael, our second-best carpenter, or Mr. Van Wyck, who vanished the same day his son became a man. It's not so uncommon. If your whole world is one noisy town with no future, sometimes you just gotta leave, even if there ain't nowhere else to go. 'Cause as me, the almost man, looks up into that town, I can hear the 146 men who remain. I can hear every ruddy last one of them. Their noise washes down the hill like a flood let loose right at me. Like a fire, like a monster the size of the sky come to get you 'cause there's nowhere to run. Here's what it's like. Here's what every minute of every day of my stupid, stinking life in this stupid, stinking town is like. Never mind plugging your ears. It don't help at all.
I am a point, just an appointment. Not quit killing.
Oh, my Esther.
Killian!
Just shutting up for my family.
You not quit all your hands.
In God's order, I am a point.
My Esther,
Killian!
Single, circular,
yes, go money.
Together.
Oh, my point.
Assess.
Single, circular,
Brandon.
You won't.
Shut up! Shut it up!
And them's just the words. The voice is talking and moaning and singing and crying. There's pictures, too. Pictures that come to your mind in a rush, no matter how much you don't want them. Pictures of memories and fantasies and secrets and plans and lies, lies, lies. Because you can lie in the noise. Even when everyone knows what you're thinking, you can bury stuff under other stuff. You can hide it in plain sight. You just don't think it clearly, or you convince yourself that the opposite of what you're hiding is true. And then, who's going to be able to pick out from the flood what's real water and what's not going to get you wet? Men lie, and they lie to themselves worst of all. Ina, for instance, I've never seen a woman nor a spackle in the flesh, obviously. I've seen them both in vids, of course, before they were outlawed. And I see them all the time in the noise of men, 'cause what else do men think about except sex and enemies? But the spacks are bigger and meaner looking in the noise than in the vids, ain't they? And noise women have lighter hair and bigger chests and wear less clothes and are a lot freer with their affections than in the vids, too. So, the thing to remember, the thing that's most important of all that I might say in this here telling of things, is that noise ain't truth. Noise is what men want to be true. And there's a difference twixt those two things so big that it could ruddy well kill you if you don't watch out.
Home, Todd!
Manchie barks a bit louder down by my leg, 'cause that's how you gotta talk in the noise. Yeah, we're going, I say. We live on the other side, to the northeast, and we're going to have to go through the town to get there, so here it comes, as fast as I can get through it. First up is Mr. Phelps's store. It's dying, the store is, like the rest of the town, and Mr. Phelps spends all his time despairing. Even when you're buying stuff from him, and he's polite as can be, the despair of him seeps at you like pus from a cut.
"Ending," says his noise. "Ending. It's all ending."
And rags and rags and rags. And
my Julie. My dear, dear Julie.
Who was his wife and who don't wear no clothes at all in Mr. Phelps's noise.
"Hiya, Todd,"
he calls as Manchie and I hurry by. "Hi, Mr. Phelps."
"Beautiful day, ain't she?"
"She sure is, Mr. Phelps."
"Beaut,"
barks Manchie, and Mr. Phelps laughs, but his noise just keeps saying,
"Ending,"
and
"Julie,"
and
"Rags,"
and pictures of what he misses about his wife, and what she used to do, as if it's supposed to be unique or something. I don't think anything particular in my noise for Mr. Phelps, just my usual stuff you can't help. Though, I must admit, I find myself thinking it all a little bit louder to cover up thoughts about the hole I found in the swamp, to block it out behind louder noise. Don't know why I should do this. Don't know why I should hide it. But I'm hiding it. Manchie and me carry on walking pretty fast, 'cause next is the gas station and Mr. Hammer. The gas station don't work no more, 'cause the fission generator that made the gas went kerflooey last year and just sits there beside the gas station like a hulking, ugly, hurt toe, and no one had lived next to it except Mr. Hammer, and Mr. Hammer's much worse than Mr. Phelps, 'cause he'll aim his noise right at you. And it's ugly noise. Angry noise. Pictures of yourself in ways that you don't want pictures of yourself. Violent pictures and bloody pictures. And all you can do is make your own noise as loud as you can and try to sweep up Mr. Phelps's noise in it, too, and send it right back to Mr. Hammer.
Apples and ending
and
fist over hand
and
Ben
and
Julie
and
Butte Todd
and
the generator is flickering
and
rags
and shut up, just shut up
and look at me, boy.
And I turn my head anyway, even though I don't want to. But sometimes you get caught off guard, and so I turn my head, and there's Mr. Hammer in his window, looking right at me in
1 month,
he thinks. And there's a picture from his noise, and it involves me standing on my own, but somehow even more alone than that. And I don't know what it means, or if it's real, or if it's a purposeful lie, and So I think about a hammer going into Mr. Hammer's head over and over, and he just smiles from his window. The road curves round the station, past the clinic, which is Dr. Baldwin, and all the crying and moaning men do to doctors when nothing's really wrong with them. Today, it's Mr. Fox complaining about how he can't breathe, which would be a pitiable thing if he didn't smoke so much. And then, as you pass the clinic, God Almighty, you get the stupid, stupid bar, which even at this hour of the day is just a howl of noise, because what they do there is turn the music up so loud it's meant to drown out noise, but that only works partway, and so you get loud music and loud noise, and worse, drunk noise, which comes at you like a mallet. Shouts and howls and weeping from men whose faces never change, and just horror pilations of the past and all the women that used to be. A whole lot about the women that used to be, but nothing that makes any sense, 'cause drunk noise is like a drunk man, blurry and boring and dangerous. It gets hard to walk around the center of town. Hard to think about the next step, 'cause so much noise is weighing on your shoulders. I honestly don't know how men do it. I don't know how I'm going to do it when I become a man, lest something changes on the day that I don't know about. The road bears up past the bar and to the right, going by the police station and the jail. All one place and in use more than you might think for a town so small. The sheriff is Mr. Prentice Jr., who's barely 2 years older than me and only been a man for a short while, but who took to his job well and quick. And in his cell is whoever Mayor Prentice has told Mr. Prentice Jr. to make an example of this week. Right now, it's Mr. Turner, who didn't hand over enough of his corn yield to the good use of the whole town, which just means he didn't give no free corn to Mr. Prentice and his men. So you've gone through the town with your dog, and you got all this noise behind you. Mr. Phelps and Mr. Hammer and Dr. Baldwin and Mr. Fox, and the extra, extra noise from the bar, and Mr. Prentice Jr.'s noise, and Mr. Turner's moaning noise, and you're still not done with the noise of the town, 'cause here comes the church. The church is why we're all here on New World in the first place, of course, and pretty much every Sunday you can hear Aaron preaching about why we left behind the corruption and sin of Old World, and about how we'd aim to start a new life of purity and brotherhood in a whole new Eden. That worked out well, huh? People still go to church, though, mainly because they have to, even though the mayor himself hardly ever bothers, leaving the rest of us to listen to Aaron preach about how we're the only thing each of us have out here, us men together, and how all of us have gotta bind ourselves in a single community. How if one of us falls, we all fall. He says that one a lot. Manchie and me are quiet as possible going past the front door of the church. Praying noise comes from inside. It's got a special feel to it. A special purpley sick feel, like men are bleeding it out. Even though it's always the same stuff, but the purpley blood just keeps on coming.
Help us! Save us! Forgive us! Help us, save us, forgive us, get us out of here. Please, God, please, God, please, God.
Though as far as I know, no one's never heard no noise back from this God fella. Aaron's in there too, back from his walk and preaching over the prayers. I can hear his voice, not just his noise, and it's all
sacrifice, this, and scripture, that, and blessings here, and sainthood there, and he's going on at such a rattle his noise is like gray fire behind him, and you can't pick out anything in it that he might be up to something, mightn't he?
The sermon might be covering for something, and I'm beginning to wonder if I know what that something is. And then I hear,
"Young Todd,"
in his noise, and I say, "Hurry up, Manchie," and we scoot our way along real quick. The last thing you pass as you crest the hill of Prentistown is the mayor's house, which is the weirdest and hardest noise of all, 'cause Mayor Prentice, well, Mayor Prentice is different. His noise is awful clear, and I mean awful in the awful way. He believes, see, that order can be brought to noise. He believes that noise can be sorted out, that if you could harness it somehow, you could put it to use. And when you walk by the mayor's house, you can hear him and the men closest to him, his deputies and things. And they're always doing these thought exercises, these counting things and imagining perfect shapes and saying orderly chants like, I am the circle and the circle is me. Whatever that's supposed to mean. And it's like he's molding a little army into shape, like he's preparing himself for something, like he's forging some kind of noise weapon. It feels like a threat. It feels like the world changing and leaving you behind.
1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. I am the circle and the circle is me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. If one of us falls, we all fall.
I will be a man soon, and men do not run in fear. But I give Manchi a little push, and we walk even a little faster than before, giving the mayor's house as wide a curve as possible, till we're past it and on the gravel path that heads on toward our house. After a while, the town disappears behind us, and the noise starts to get a little bit quieter, though it never, never stops, and we can both breathe a bit easier. Manchi barks,
"Noise, Todd!"
"Yes, sirree," I say.
"Quiet in the swamp, Todd," Manchi says. "Quiet, quiet, quiet."
"Yes," I say, and then I think, and I hurry and say, "Shut up, Manchi!" And I smack him on his rump, and he says, "Ow, Todd!" But I'm looking back toward the town, but there's no stopping noise once it's out, is there? And if it was something you could see moving through the air, I wonder if you could see the hole in the noise floating right out of me. Right out of my thoughts from where I was protecting it, and it's such a small bit of noise, and it'd be easy to miss in the great roar of everything else, but there it goes, there it goes, there it goes, heading right back toward the world of men. 3. Ben and Killian.
"And just where do you think you've been?"
Killian says, as soon as Manchi and I come into view off the path. He's lying down on the ground, deep into our little fission generator, the one outside the front of the house, fixing whatever's gone wrong with it this month. His arms are covered in grease, and his face is covered in annoyance, and his noise is buzzy like mad bees, and I can already feel myself getting angry, and I haven't even properly got home yet. "I was in the swamp getting apples for Ben," I say. "There's work to be done, and boys are off playing." He looks back into the generator. Something makes a clunk inside, and he says, "Damn it!"
"I said I wasn't playing if you'd ever listen," I say, but it's more like a shout. "Ben wanted apples, so I was getting him some ruddy apples."
"Uh-huh," Killian says, looking back at me. "And where might these apples be, then?" And of course, I'm not holding any apples, am I? I don't even remember dropping the bag I'd started to fill, but of course, I must have when...
"When what?" Killian says.
"Quit listening so close," I say. He sighs his Killian sigh, and here we go. "It's not like we ask you to do so much around here, Todd," which is a lie. "But we can't keep this farm running by ourselves," which is true. "And even if you ever finish all your chores, which you don't," another lie, "they work me like a slave, we'd still be playing a catch-up to nothing, now wouldn't we?" And this is true, too. The town can't grow no more. It can only shrink. And help ain't coming.
"Pay attention when I talk to you," Killian says.
"Attention!"
Manchi barks.
"Shut up," I say.
"Don't talk to your dog that way,"
Killian says.
"I wasn't talking to my dog," I think, loud and clear enough to hear.
Killian glares at me, and I glare back, and this is how it always is, our noise throbbing red with hassle and irritation. It's never been so good with Killian. Not never. Ben's always been the kind one. Killian's always been the other one. But it's got worse as the day approaches when I'll finally be a man
and won't have to listen to any more of his crap. Killian closes his eyes and breathes loudly once through his nose. Todd, he starts, his voice a bit lower. Where's Ben? I say. His face hardens a little more. Lambing starts in a week, Todd. All I do to this is say again, where's Ben? You get the sheep fed and into their paddocks, and then I want you to fix the gate to the east field once and for all, Todd Hewitt. I have asked you at least twice before now. I lean back on my heels. Well, how was your trip to the swamp, Todd? I say, making my voice go all sarcastic. Well, it was fine and dandy there, Killian. Thanks for asking. Did you see anything interesting out there in the swamp, Todd? Well, funny you should ask, Killian, 'cause I sure did see something interesting which might explain this here cut on my lip that you ain't asked about, but I guess it'll have to just wait till the sheep are fed and I fix the goddamn fence. Watch your mouth, Killian says. I don't have time for your games. Go do the sheep. I clench up my fists and make a sound that sounds like, argh! Which tells Killian I just can't put up with his non-reason not for 1 second longer. Come on, Manchie, I say. The sheep, Todd, Killian calls as I start walking away. The sheep first. Yeah, I'll do the ruddy sheep, I mutter to myself. I'm walking away faster now, my blood jumping and Manchie's getting excited from the roar of my noise. Sheep, he barks. Sheep, sheep, Todd, sheep. Sheep, quiet, Todd. Quiet in the swamp, Todd. Shut up, Manchie, I say. What was that? Killian says, and there's something in his noise that makes us both turn around. He's sitting up by the generator now, his full attention on us, his noise coming right at us like a laser. Quiet, Killian, Manchie barks. What does he mean, quiet? Killian's eyes and noise are searching me all over. What do you care? I turn again. I got ruddy sheep to feed. Todd, wait! He calls after us, but then something starts beeping on the generator, and he says, damn it! Again, and has to go back to it, though I can feel all kinds of asking marks in his noise following me, getting fainter as I head out to our fields. Blast him! Blast him and all! I think. In more or less those words and worse as I stomp across our farm. We live about a mile northeast of town, and we do sheep on one half of the farm and wheat on the other. Wheat's harder, so Ben and Killian do most of that. Since I was old enough to be taller than the sheep, that's who I've taken care of. Me, that is, not me and Manchie, though another one of the false line excuses why he was given to me was that I could teach him to be a sheepdog, which, for obvious reasons, by which I mean his complete stupidity, hasn't worked out as planned. Feeding and watering and shearing and lambing and even castrating and butchering, I do all these things. We're one of three meat and wool providers for the town. Used to be one of five. Soon to be one of two because Mr. Majority Banks ought to be dying from his drink problem any day now. We'll fold his flock into ours. I should say, I'll fold his flock into ours, like I did when Mr. Galt disappeared 2 winters ago. And there'll be new ones to butcher, new ones to castrate, new ones to shear, new ones to put in pens with ewes at the right times. And will I get a thank you? No, I will not. I am Todd Hewitt, I think, the day just keeping on not making my noise any quieter. I am almost a man. Sheep, say the sheep when I pass their field without stopping. Sheep, they say, watching me go. Sheep, sheep,
sheep,
barks Manchie.
Sheep,
say the sheep back. Sheep got even less to say than dogs do. I've been listening out for Ben's noise over the farm, and I've tracked him down to one corner of one of the wheat fields. Planting's done, harvest is months away, so there's not so much to do with the wheat at the minute. Just make sure all the generators and the fission tractor and the electric threshers are ready to start working. You'd think this would mean I'd get a little help with the sheep, but you would be wrong. Ben's noise is humming a little tune out near one of the irrigation spouts, so I take a turn and head across the field toward him. His noise ain't nothing like Killian's. It's calmer and clearer, and though you can't see noise, if Killian's always seems reddish, then Ben's seems blue or sometimes green. They're different men from each other, different as fire and water, Ben and Killian, my more or less parents. Story is, my ma was friends with Ben before they left for New World. That they were both members of the church when the offer of leaving and starting up a settlement was made. Ma convinced Pa, and Ben convinced Killian, and when the ships landed and the settlement started, it was my Ma and Pa who raised sheep on the next farm over from Ben and Killian, growing wheat, and it was all friendly and nice, and the sun never set, and men and women sang songs together, and lived and loved, and never got sick, and never, never died. That's the story from the noise, anyway, so who knows what it was actually like before. 'Cause then, of course, I was born, and everything changed. The Spacks released their woman-killing germ, and that was it for my Ma. And then the war started, and was won, and that was it for pretty much the rest of New World. And there's me, just a baby, not knowing nothing about nothing. And of course, I'm not the only baby. There's loads of us. And suddenly only half a ton of men to take care of all us babies and boys. So a lot of us died, and I was counted among the lucky, 'cause it was only natural for Ben and Killian to take me in and feed me and raise me and teach me and generally make it possible for me to go on being alive. And so I'm kinda like their son. Well, more than kinda like, but less than actually being so. Ben says Killian only fights with me all the time 'cause he cares about me so much. But if that's true, I say it's a funny way to show it. A way that don't seem much like caring at all, if you ask me. But Ben's a different kind of man than Killian. A kind kind of man that makes him not normal in Prentice Town. 145 of the men in this town, even the newly made ones, just passed their birthdays. Even Killian, though, to a lesser degree. They see me, at best, as something to ignore. And at worst, as something to hit. And so I spend most of my days figuring out ways to be ignored so as I won't get hit. Except for Ben, who I can't describe much further without seeming soft and stupid and like a boy, so I won't. Just to say that I never knew my Pa. But if you woke up one day and had a choice of picking one from a selection, if someone said, "Here then, boy, pick who you want," then Ben wouldn't be the worst choice you could make that morning. He's whistling as we approach, and though I can't see him yet, and he can't see me, he changes the tune as he senses me coming to a song I recognize. Early one morning, just as the sun was rising. Which he says was a favorite of my Ma's, but which I think is really just a favorite of his since he's whistled and sang it for me since I can remember. My blood is still storming away from Killian, but I immediately start to feel a little bit calmer. Even though it is a song for babies. I know. Shut up.
Ben!
Manchi barks and goes running around the irrigation setup. Hello, Manchi, I hear as I round the corner and see Ben scratching Manchi twixt the ears. Manchi's eyes are closed and his leg is thumping on the ground with pleasure. And though Ben can certainly tell from my noise that I've been fighting with Killian again, he don't say nothing but, "Hello, Todd." "Hi, Ben." I look at the ground, kicking a stone. And Ben's noise is saying, "Apples," and "Killian," and "You're getting so big," and "Killian," again, and "Itch in the crack of my arm," and "Apples," and "Dinner," and "Gosh, it's warm out." And it's all so smooth and non-grasping, it's like laying down in a brook on a hot day. "You calming down there, Todd?" he finally says. "Reminding yourself who you are?" "Yeah," I say. "Just why does he have to come at me like that? Why can't he just say hello? Not even a greeting. It's all, 'I know you done something wrong, and I'm gonna keep at you till I find out what it is.'" "That's just his way, Todd. You know that. So you keep saying." I pick a blade of young wheat and stick the end in my mouth, not quite looking at him. Left the apples at the house, did you? I look at him. I chew on the wheat. He knows I didn't. He can tell. And there's a reason, he says, still scratching Manchi. There's a reason which ain't coming clear. He's trying to read my noise, see what truth he can sift from it, which most men think is a good enough excuse for starting a fight. But I don't mind with Ben. He cocks his head and stops scratching Manchi. Aaron? Yeah, I saw Aaron. He did that to your lip? Yeah. That son of a whore. He frowns and steps forward. I just might have to have words with that man. Don't, I say. Don't. It'll just be more trouble, and it don't hurt that much. He takes my chin into his fingers and lifts my head so he can see the cut. That son of a whore, he says again, quietly. He touches the cut with his fingers, and I flinch away. It's nothing, I say. You stay away from that man, Todd Hewitt. Oh, like I went running to the swamp hoping to run into him? He ain't right. Well, holy crap, thanks for that bit of info, Ben. I say, and then I catch a bit of his noise that says, 1 month. And it's a new thing. A whole new bit of something that he quickly covers up with other noise. What's going on, Ben? I say. What's going on with my birthday? He smiles, and for a second, it's not an entirely true smile. For a second, it's a worried smile. But after that, it's a smile true enough. It's a surprise, he says, so don't go looking. Even though I'm nearly a man, and even though I'm nearly getting on up to his height now, he still bends down a little so his face is level with mine. Not too close to be uncomfortable, just close enough so that it's safe, and I look away a little bit. And even though it's Ben, even though I trust Ben more than anyone else in this crappy little town, even though it's Ben who saved my life and who I know would do it again, I still find myself reluctant to open up my noise about what happened in the swamp, mainly because I can start to feel it pressing on my chest again whenever the thought gets near. Todd, Ben says, looking at me closely.
Quiet, Manchi barks softly. Quiet in swamp.
Ben looks at Manchi, then back at me, his eyes going all soft and asking and full of concern. What's he talking about, Todd? I sigh. We saw something, I say, out there in the swamp. Well, we didn't see it. It hid, but it was like a rip in the noise, like a tear. I stop talking because he stopped listening to my voice. I've opened up my noise for him and am remembering it as truthfully as I can, and he's looking at me something fierce, and from way behind me I can hear Killian coming, and he's calling, Ben! And, Todd! And there's concern in his voice and in his noise, and Ben's is starting to buzz a little too, and I just keep thinking as truthfully as I can about the hole we found in the noise, but quietly too. Quietly, quietly, so as to keep the town from hearing if I can. And here comes Killian still, and Ben's just looking at me and looking at me till finally I have to ask. Is it Spax? I say. Is it the Spackle? Are they back? Ben! Killian's yelling it now as he's coming across the fields. Are we in danger? I ask Ben. Will there be another war? But all Ben says is, Oh, my God. Real quiet-like. And then he says it again. Oh, my God. And then, without even moving or looking away, he says, We have to get you out of here. We have to get you out of here right now. 4. Don't think it. Killian comes running up, but before he says anything to us, Ben cuts him off and says, Don't think it! Ben turns to me. Don't you think it neither. You cover it up with your noise. You hide it. You hide it as best you can. And he's grabbing my shoulders as he's saying it and squeezing tight enough to make my blood jump even more than it already is. What's going on? I say. Did you walk home through town? Killian asks. Course I walked home through town, I snap. What other effing way is there to get home? Killian's face tightens up, but it's not with being pissed off at me snapping. It's tightening up with fear. Fear I can hear loud as a shout in his noise. They don't yell at me for effing neither, which makes it all somehow worse. Manchie's barking his head off by this point. Killian! Quiet! Effing! Todd! But nobody's bothering to tell him to shut up. Killian looks at Ben. We're gonna have to do it now. I know, Ben says. What's going on? I say again, all loud-like. Do what now? I twist away from Ben and stand looking at them both. Ben and Killian take another look at each other and then back at me. You have to leave Prentice Town, Ben says. My eyeballs go back and forth twixt theirs, but they're not letting nothing go in their noise except general worry. What do you mean I have to leave Prentice Town? I say. There ain't nowhere else on New World but Prentice Town. They take yet another look at each other. Stop doing that, I say. Come on, Killian says. We've already got your bag packed. How can you already have my bag packed? Killian says to Ben. We probably don't have much time. And Ben says to Killian, he can go down by the river. And Killian says to Ben, you know what this means. And Ben says to Killian, it doesn't change the plan. What the F is going on? I roar. But I don't say F now, do I? 'Cause it seems the situation calls for something a little stronger. What effing plan? But they're still not getting mad. Ben lowers his voice, and I can see him trying to get his noise into some kind of order, and he says to me, it's very, very important you keep what happened in the swamp out of your noise as best you can. Why? Are the Spacks coming back to kill us? Don't think about it, Killian snaps. Cover it up. Keep it deep and quiet till you're so far out of town no one can hear you. Now come on. He takes off back toward the house, running, actually running. Come on, Todd, Ben says. Not till someone explains something. You'll get an explanation, Ben says, taking me by the arm and pulling me along. You'll get more than you ever wanted. And there's so much sadness to him when he says it that I don't say nothing more. Just follow along, running back to the house, Manchie barking his head off behind us. By the time we make it back to the house, I'm expecting... I don't know what I'm expecting. An army of Spackle coming out of the woods? A lineup of Mayor Prentice's men with guns at the ready? The whole house burning down? I don't know. Ben and Killian's noise ain't making much sense. My own thoughts are boiling over like a volcano, and Manchie won't stop barking, so who can tell anything in all this racket? But there's no one there. The house, our house, is just as it was, quiet and farm-like. Killian busts in the back door, goes into the prayer room, which we never use, and starts pulling boards up from the floor. Ben goes to the pantry and starts throwing dried foods and fruit into a cloth sack. Then he goes to the toilet and takes out a small medipack and throws that in, too. I just stand there like a doofus, wondering just what in the effing blazes is going on. I know what you're thinking. How can I not know if all day, every day, I'm hearing every thought of the two men who run my house? That's the thing, though. Noise is noise. It's crash and clatter, and it usually adds up to one big mash of sound and thought and picture, and half the time it's impossible to make any sense of it at all. Men's minds are messy places, and noise is like the active, breathing face of that mess. It's what's true and what's believed, and what's imagined and what's fantasized, and it says one thing and a completely opposite thing at the same time, and even though the truth is definitely in there, how can you tell what's true and what's not when you're getting everything? The noise is a man unfiltered. And without a filter, a man is just chaos walking. I ain't leaving, I say, as they keep doing their stuff. They don't pay me no mind. I ain't leaving, I say again, as Ben steps past me into the prayer room to help Killian lift up boards. They find what they're looking for, and Killian lifts out a rucksack, an old one I thought I'd lost. Ben opens the top and takes a quick peek through and I can see some clothes of mine and something that looks like... Is that a book? I say. You were supposed to burn those ages ago.